Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Adam Pranica.
I am also your host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
I don't really have an open, do you, Ben?
God, I don't either.
It feels like it's been a long time when we've just sort of walked into a show without anything to talk about.
What are we going to do with this expansive 2 to 7 minutes that we spend at the top of every show not talking about what people came here to hear us talk about?
Do you want to open up more cards?
I would do that.
All right, let's do that.
The game is a 5-card stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the cards there.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Okay, let's open them up. You know, I was thinking last episode when we were recording that, I still only have 2... signed cards. I mean, I had that one that was like signed by Juan Ortiz, but that's embossed signature. Like, he didn't actually put a pen to that card.
You know, Ben, that means, in the gambler's fallacy parlance, that you're due.
Yeah. Well, this is, I think they're including this one, 7 packs left, so I know that there's one in one of these.
We're at the point in the box that these are all repeats.
Ooh, at least for me. I got Best of Both Worlds Part 2.
You don't say.
Yeah, I don't think I had that one before.
How's that look?
Looks great.
Show me in the camera that we're now using. Hey.
Kind of dark, but
yeah.
It's kind of a I think it's meant to evoke the flare on the lens that they got whenever Patrick Stewart would nail it with that laser attached to his head. We didn't really talk about in that when we recorded those episodes, like how good he was at doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed like there must have been some luck involved, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe that's a real skill.
I think the beam has to hit the lens somehow. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to aim something at something you're not looking directly at. Oh, but I guess he was always talking to...
We should mention, as we do every once in a while, that we're opening up Star Trek The Next Generation Portfolio Prints Trading Card Season 1.
Yeah.
And by that I mean Series 1, otherwise known as The Odds.
Yeah, we've heard that they got renewed for Season 2.
The Evens.
Yeah. Let's see, what else do I got? I got Deja Q. I've got... Homeward. Oh, this is that one where we meet Worf's foster brother. And then I've got one for The Enemy, that one where Geordi falls down the well.
Yeah. And he meets a bread box down there.
Yeah. And then my last one is for a comic book cover, and it's for Children of Chaos.
What's it look like?
I guess it's a comic book about some non... Oh, I guess this must be the Stargazer, because it's got, like, a depiction of Patrick Stewart with a full head of hair. And, let's see, it says... Well,
is it a fade? High-top fade?
It's a... I wish. It's real... it's a real square haircut, I'll put it that way. It says, well, Captain of the Stargazer, Picard won a trial by combat on Chalna, enraging Chalnoth advisor Pathox. In the present, The Enterprise finds the Federation ship Aquitaine and the Chelnoth vessel Blade in orbit above a planet. Their crew's missing. Also investigating is the Chelnoth warship Bludgeoner, captained by Pathox.
I had to take Aquitaine a little bit during junior high to help cure my acne.
Oh yeah, did you get a little of the signature anal bleeding that drug is so strongly associated with?
Still do.
You get anything interesting in your pack?
No, I got nothing.
Nothing?
I mean, they're all repeats.
Dang.
I got 1100001, Masterpiece Society. I got Emergence and The First Duty. All repeats. I'm basically in this for you, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting.
Because you don't have...
Waiting with bated breath for your next signature card.
You don't... There's no uncertainty for you. You have all of the big cards that you're going to unwrap. You've already unwrapped.
I do. I got my Sterling Mace Jr., my Charles Dennis, and my very foxy J.C. Brandy.
I mean, in some ways I envied you when you opened all those, but now I kind of like the fact that I still have a lot of potential in my packs.
What if you get a fucking whoopee? That would be incredible.
What if we've read wrong and there's a fucking Jaeger in there?
It would be one of the best moments the show's ever had.
That would be... We might have to just end the show on that high note, you know?
We gave away 3 Jaegers on our tour,
yeah.
And I've yet to see them pop up on eBay, which I think is a good sign. I was very stern with everyone who we gave Jaegers to not to sell them on the open market, and true to their word, they've not done that.
Yeah, they did you right.
The Jaeger bubble remains.
Yeah. Unfortunately, nobody has taken you up on your $1,000 Jaeger, have they?
Not yet, but I'm confident one day they will. Speaking of inflation, I believe our overly inflated Marin Open has come to a close. What do you say we talk about an inflation of another kind? The inflation of a belly. It's season 4, episode 23, The Host.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This is a captain's log being recorded by Dr. Crusher.
And, a lot of guest logs.
Yeah. This is two lady logs in a row, which is nice. I like episodes that are not from the perspective of the straight, cisgendered white male characters all the time.
Most ladies deny that they ever do logs at all.
This is the 24th century, Adam. I think that we've gotten past that kind of mythology.
You ever walk into a bathroom after a lady does a log? It's horrifying. In some ways, they're more powerful than we are.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lady log in this episode, but there's no lady loaf.
Nope.
Till the very end. Spoiler alert. Soiler alert. The doctor is pretty excited because she's just gotten a letter from Wesley. He's doing great at the academy, but also she's got a boyfriend. And we come out of a exterior shot of the ship to like an ECU on some face sucking going on.
It is really close up.
There is so much face sucking in this episode. It's almost like an uncomfortable overuse of super close up kissing. Like they've already gone through the getting to know you part of their relationship. They're fully in like excited honeymoon mode.
Yeah.
With this relationship, and it's Dr. Crusher and this guy Odan, who is a lightly loafed ambassador from Trill, and he is a mediator, and they're gonna help take. He's kind of a similar type character to Ginger Jesus and that they are Ubering him to a planet where there's some hostilities taking place, and he is going to defuse the situation and get everybody back on peaceful terms.
All the great diplomats have a couple of traits, Ben. You got your deep V.
Yeah.
And you have your late 80s, early 90s David Copperfield hair.
Yeah, they really do have that same haircut.
Yeah. It's feathered like the cover of a disco album.
Yeah.
He's looking great.
Yeah. They are smooching in the elevator, and Data hops on.
Ambassador Odam, Dr. Crusher. I was just on my way to speak to you.
At one of the floors, and is like, I'm interested in collaborating with you on some of the research we've been doing on this planet we're heading to. And if you've got a couple hours to spare, I can brief you on my findings. And like, they're definitely headed off to bone down. So they need to kind of get out of this situation. And so they kind of construct an elaborate fiction that,
unfortunately, I'm not feeling very well.
And the doctor is gonna
bring you a hypospray to take care of it.
So she's got an excuse to get away from Commander Data.
Do you think they're very lucky that it was Data that hopped on board the turbolift instead of Geordi? Because Geordi could have seen through his visor what was actually happening.
Yeah.
You can hide a boner lean from Data. You can't hide it from Geordi.
It is so cruel and unnecessary to lie to Data.
Yeah. What's it going to hurt to tell the truth?
Just say, like, Data, please don't tell anybody else about this, but Odan and I are going to go bone down, and we just don't have time to work with you right now.
Yeah. It's like confiding in a blender. It's not going to hurt his feelings.
Exactly. Like, they are acting the way they might have around Geordi and gotten busted. No reason to act like that around Data. And they know him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Weird choice.
Anyways, they split up, and Odan goes back to his quarters, and he's like, you know, getting ready for the sexing, and gets his shirt open, and he is rocking like a proto Quato. Like, his belly is like moving around and rippling
and
bulging.
You could say he has a sort of erection right now.
Yeah, he's like it's like a pregrection. Because it looks a little bit like he's got a baby in him.
He's really got some grumble guts, Ben. like he went out and had some food truck food that didn't agree with him earlier. Looks like he might be in some trouble.
Yeah. Well,
he might want a pre-Pepto before his date gets there.
Yeah, and he's got a pre-Pepto in the form of a weird device that he like shines on his belly, and it like calms down the whatever is moving and rippling around in there. So we go to our title sequence, and we come back, and they're definitely like, it's a weird thing because they're like, he's got like post-coitus clothes on. But she's like back in uniform, and she's got to go to work, and he's trying to like, hey, why don't you come back and roll around with me one more time? And this is a weird episode because I read that Gates McFadden was pretty pregnant while they shot this,
and
so they do a lot of like her doctor's smock is always closed in this episode. Which does a little bit to hide it, but she's like 7 months in, and
wow,
and they definitely like had to put the camera in places that it might not have normally been to obscure the fact that she has a fairly serious belly of her own.
Look at you doing research.
Yeah, well, I kind of knew that had happened at some point because it also happened in Voyager with the engineer in that in that series, B'Elanna Torres. Like in one season, she just has like a smock on the whole time, and it's like never really commented on why she has a smock. And it's because she was pregnant and they needed to hide the fact that she was pregnant because it wasn't like being written into the show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Gates McFadden had to do this like really kissy, super schmaltzy, huggy, kissy part while she's like very heavily with child.
Wow.
It made it real weird for me to watch.
I think the actor commentary track would be super fascinating from this show, both from his and her perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's got the belly bulging out, so does she, so they have to really lean over to get their kisses in.
Yeah.
Just the body language alone.
They have to really Eiffel Tower that over their bellies.
Well, anyways, the delegates come aboard, or like I guess the first, there's going to be three delegates, right? Like there's the kind of the governor of the main planet tells them about these two moons that each have their own sort of nation state on them, and the people on each moon hate each other's guts, and there's some sort of energy system on one of them that's fucking up the ecology on the other one, and they're mobilizing for war, and Odan is the only person in the galaxy who can talk them down off this ledge. And I guess his father was the diplomat that negotiated an accord in a previous generation. So they're very hopeful that Odan can kind of like keep this legacy going. But, you know, the situation is tense, and these very loafed up, very strange looking aliens are pretty pissed off at each other. And so Odan is going to go, I guess, down to like one of the planets and try and talk some sense into all of them. And so they're like, cool, well, we'll beam you down, buddy. And he's like,
excuse me, Captain, I prefer to shuttle to the surface.
He's like a McCoy / Pulaski type, doesn't trust the transporter.
And this is common enough to where this doesn't raise any eyebrows. They're like, sure, we'll stick you in a Previa with Riker, our best pilot. Won't be a problem.
Yeah, which is classy move, right? Like they don't put him in a bunk bed.
No.
They're like, you're not going in one of our flat pack shuttles. You're going in one of the nice ones. And so they get on board, and like, you know, I guess Crusher and him like kind of have a nice like kiss goodbye kind of thing. I think before this, Troy has explained to Dr. Crusher that everybody is onto her, like her, like she thinks she's real slick. Like her relationship with Odan is not common knowledge on the ship. And she's like, she's having a little spa day, and Troy comes in, and she's like, hey, so
you're in love.
And Crusher's like, heavens me, I have no idea what you're talking about. And Troy's like, everybody knows you two fucking.
This scene is so awkward.
Yeah. Couldn't they have put on some leotards and done a workout?
It just plays into the way that female friendships are portrayed on the show versus male friendships. Mm-hmm. When you're in a male friendship, you meet up in 10 forward over some beverages. You meet up in the phaser target range to talk things out.
Mm-hmm.
When you are a lady type person, you meet in the spa.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's unfortunate, you know?
Yeah.
Like they don't have to put an eye mask on Beverly. They don't have to put her cuticles in the green tea, you know?
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I can appreciate the idea that a ship of this size with the diversity of its crew should cater to girls who want girl time. And I think that's good, right? Like, that's good. And we should see that in a scene like this.
But we should also see, like if this is such a, you know, progressive future, like, shouldn't Worf go for, like, a mani-pedi every so often?
Sure. Yeah. Get some frosted tips.
Yeah.
It is the early 90s, Ben.
Worf and Kalar go for his and hers Brazilians.
Oh, man. Gonna have to go over that a couple of times, I imagine. Several rips.
Yeah.
So Troy just sort of relationship splains Beverly a little bit. She sort of calls attention to the idea that she might be honeymooning. And Beverly's like, But this feels so real. This doesn't feel like that sort of fake new relationship shit. I really like this guy, and I think we might be into it for the long term.
Yeah.
And they sort of leave it at that.
He might be the one.
Yeah.
So anyways, Odan gets on this shuttle, and at this point, Crusher knows the cat's out of the bag, so she's openly affectionate with him as he leaves. And it's pretty quick that we know that this shuttle is going to be in big trouble. And the way that we know that is Data gives copious updates on its status as it leaves the ship.
Shuttle has cleared the bay door.
I feel like whenever Data is telling you like way more than you need to know about what's going on with the shuttle, you know that trouble is not far around the corner. And sure enough, a ship claiming to be an escort from one of the moons comes out from a shadow and starts taking pot shots at the shuttle. And for some reason, the Enterprise does not defend the shuttle. Like, I feel like if you've got, like, the shuttle has just left and the mothership is right there, like, and they're like, oh, fuck, those guys are shooting at our guys. They don't, you know, like, why doesn't Worf just bullseye him with one of the phasers?
This is like a Gulf of Tonkin moment, right? Like, like their shit's getting blown up a little bit and they don't return fire. They don't return fire, I guess, because they don't want to start a war.
It's never really explained. I feel like
it isn't.
I guess the situation is really tense, so any destruction of materiel could be the match in the tinderbox, but
yeah.
I feel like you're allowed to defend yourself, or at least extend the shields of the Enterprise around the shuttlecraft. I mean, it just left.
I think there are a lot of problematic issues that they have with these shuttles. It seems like any time a shuttle gets close to a planet's atmosphere, it's a goner. Like, there's nothing they can do about it. And in the same way, as soon as this shuttle leaves the nest, they're unable to defend it in any way either. Yeah. There's shuttle rules, and then there are starship-to-starship rules, and I feel like those are totally different on this show.
That's true. Well, anyways, in the process of ducking some of this phaser fire, Odan falls out of his seat, and
we have a medical emergency.
And so, like, they get him back to Six Bay, and he's like on death's door, and he's like, "Hey, listen, like, you're getting weird readings on that tricorder because this," and he like points to his face, "this ain't me." And then he points down to his belly, and he goes, "This is me." And Crusher is standing over him, and the belly starts rippling around, and she's like, "What the fuck is that?
Get this guy 40 cc's of Gas-X. Now!"
"It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform."
So it turns out, Odan is not a man. He is a man with a symbiont in him. There's a parasite or a creature that is living symbiotically with him. The humanoid part is just the host, and the mind and personality live in this thing that lives inside of him. And he's saying, like, the host is dying. There's nothing to say that the symbiont has to die, though. Like, just call up the people at Trill, and they'll send a new host out. They'll be here just in the nick of time. But
it's like a Grand Theft Auto situation. The Trill has crashed his car, and he needs to get out of this car and get into another. Keep going.
yeah, and hopefully crash the car in a good part of town where there's nice whips to steal, you know?
Right, yeah.
They discover that the Trill replacement host is going to be, it's going to be there in like a couple of days. Like, it's they're coming, but it's not soon enough to keep the symbiont alive in the meantime. And so Data's like, "Well, you could try stitching it into me." And they're like, "Data, you're a robot. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all."
It is the dumbest idea maybe ever offered on the show. Like, there is nothing that makes us believe that that's a viable option.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Like, I would give my leftovers to Data to keep warm, but I would not depend on him to keep a life form warm.
Yeah.
Like in utero style.
Very strange.
So Riker sees how sexually magnetic Odin is with the Trill.
Mm-hmm.
And at this moment, I think he sort of feels like this is the top of the mountain for him.
Mm.
Like, I've been in my sexual prime for years.
I have been inside many species, but I've not had a species inside me.
Do you remember the cartoon version of Transformers?
You remember seeing that movie? Yeah.
So the story in Transformers is there's this matrix of leadership that Optimus Prime has inside his body.
Uh-huh.
That gives him all the leadership qualities that the Autobots follow.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like Riker sees this as sort of a sexual matrix that he can put inside himself to make him like Rikermas Prime.
Mm.
Like the peak sexual Riker with this Trill inside him.
Now he can obtain consent even from the Doctor, who would never have granted it before.
That's what I'm saying. Because, Ben, it is just as insane of an idea for Riker to offer his body to do this as it was for Data. Like, this makes no sense.
It's wild, but it happens. And so they do this operation. They drop this crazy-looking slug into Riker's belly.
Let's describe it a little bit. It's like a Nerf football-sized thing with a little... with a little tail on it. Like, what are those dinosaurs that look like little turtles with the little, like, ball tail on the back?
Oh, I think you're thinking of Ankylosaurus.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like a little baby Ankylosaur, but it's got, like lights on it and stuff.
Yeah, it's got some kind of, like, rave paint on it. Like, this thing would definitely look good under a black light.
Yeah, you totally see this guy at a Deadmau5 show.
Yeah. I'm totally rolling.
Why are you sweating, Ankylosaur? You're also so cold.
Yeah. Oh man, I would love to see an Ankylosaur at a rave. It'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's making those shapes with his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he like passes it to its friend and you're like, whoa, wait, is that really a shape?
The thing about making those shapes is that, like, that's mime. And mime is stupid. And it's all of a sudden cool when it's at a rave.
Yeah. Well,
as long as
the opening of your pant leg is larger than the opening of the waist, then it's cool.
As long as you have 40 mini stuffed animals into your pants.
As long as there is a glow stick in your mouth, it's fine.
So this Trill gets into Riker the way a overweight person gets into a bathtub. Like just sort of like wiggles itself down, like slowly lowers itself into Riker's belly. And you see on Riker's face that things are starting to take hold.
That's a bit like the way Kirk gets into the captain's chair in Generations.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, definitely with a little bit of ass wiggle.
Yeah, not tailored for the size of its ass.
Yeah.
But it gets in there. And then Riker is on the bridge in, like, Deep V Odin garb.
Yeah.
Trying to talk the governor of this planet into believing that he is, in fact, the mediator that they're looking for. And he's sorry about this... you know, being a little bit secretive about this, but in fact, he is also the father figure that they thought, negotiated the last peace treaty. He's like, I'm the same guy. Like it's me all the way down. This is just how my species rolls. And so
Ankylosaurs all the way down.
You guys are going to have to wrap your loaf encrusted heads around this and get to this conference table because, you know, the stakes are too high for you to not accept this as the truth.
In an episode that asks you to take everything at face value, this to me seemed like the most unbelievable part. Like in a negotiation like this, when your trust is broken, it's just over. And so what he's told both sides of the faction is that you just got to believe me. I'm the same guy, even though I look totally different. Also, I've been lying to you the entire time because I'm really an ankylosaur and not the Deep V David Copperfield that you knew before. And I was also my father that you met. Like, it's three lies in one.
Yeah.
And he's asking these guys to trust him now. Like, I know I lied to you before, but baby, you got to start trusting me. We got to keep this thing together.
Listen, I know I defrauded thousands of honest students with my fake university. And I know that I wrote off $900 million in other people's money as a personal loss on my tax return. But you just got to accept the fact that I am who I say I am. So, you guys ready to get on board the Enterprise and help me drain the swamp? What's up?
And surprisingly enough, these guys come to the table.
Yeah. So the episode sort of splits in two at this point, and the story is sort of in parallel. Riker / Odan running this negotiation, and Beverly kind of trying to sort through her feelings about the fact that the man she still loves is alive in the body of Riker now, and she's like, you know, a human, and so she's accustomed to the person that she loves looking a certain way on a consistent basis, and is not really sure what to do about the fact that now he looks exactly like Riker. So, like, she's trying to drown her sorrows about this, and Troy catches her.
Do you think Odan traded up?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's only weird for Beverly because it's Riker. It's not because Riker's unattractive.
No, yeah, exactly.
What do you think Odan feels when he goes into the bathroom the first time and sees all those warts?
What do you think Riker is packing? Do you think he's, like, average, or do you think he's, like, in pretty good shape down there? Do you think it's an upgrade or a lateral move or a downgrade for Odan?
I think when you are truly packing, when you are a real stick man, I don't think you have to try as hard as Riker seems to try all the time, like with the lines and the moves and the suaveness.
Yeah.
So I would tend to believe that Riker is compensating through this, mm-hmm. and not for being a little guy, but just I feel like he might be average with above average game.
Okay, fair enough.
That's
well, anyways, Crusher is having some tea, bumming out in 10 forward, and
hey Ben, you didn't answer the question: how big do you think Riker's dick is? Which was the question you asked me earlier. Don't leave me out here alone.
Did you shoot it back at me? I didn't hear you say that.
Well, I thought that would be...
I have to answer all of the questions I pose?
I would prefer that you also answer this one.
I found your answer to be pretty satisfying. I think that's pretty apt.
Okay. I just don't want to be the only one with an opinion on the record about Riker's dick size.
Here's what I'll say about Riker's dick size, Adam. I think there's an objective, you know, empirical Riker's dick size, about which I think you're right. I think it is probably an average peen. But I think that, like, psychologically, that shit fits, you know? Like, that shit fills your shit up. You know? Like,
There are probably moments when you think it's too much. But
yeah.
It ends up it's just enough.
It feels like a lot. But it's like, it's a challenge that you want to rise to.
Indeed. Well, I'm sorry I asked.
Mission accomplished.
Because it got that level of detail.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurse the disease.
Anyways, Crusher is... I'm not even going to describe the conversation between Troy and Crusher and Ten Ford. It's just that she's like trying to sort out these feelings. So Riker does a pretty good job of keeping going with the negotiations, but he's starting to kind of fall apart, and he's saying, like, no, I'm fine, you know? Like, he's telling everybody that the symptoms of, you know, like, the the Trill doesn't agree with him necessarily, and he keeps saying like he's chilling, but his hair is telling another story, and you know, it's all Crusher can do to kind of keep him alive.
I feel like you got to get the clip show machine at the ready at this point when you see how he's kind of circling the drain. He's getting real sweaty.
Yeah, warm his it up, keep it on standby.
Yeah, his hair's out of place. It's not looking good.
Yeah, and this is sort of when she kind of breaks down, you know, like he's kind of refusing any help, and she goes and like tries to have a tea in her quarters, and she looks at this flower that he gave her, and she's like, nope, I'm going to go back and get some of that D. And so she goes to his quarters, and they get down.
I mean, to what degree do you think Riker is in there? As in, like, in the thoughts. Is he a passenger in this vehicle, and he is also experiencing this at the same time? Or is he basically like in a coma? The Riker part of the body is
right,
has gone away. I think
is it being John
really
Malkovich,
like an answer to that.
Or is
yeah,
it
yeah.
or is it like the Barclay episode where he like has memory of all of the actions but can't remember like why or how he did anything?
Right, and we never get an answer to that.
It's not even treated like an interesting question. Like we don't see Riker after the Trill comes out of him.
Yeah.
Right.
And God, what an amazing. No, we. I mean, he's like, he's asleep on a bed in Six Bay.
Yeah.
And the Trill is in a jar of Barbicide, like waiting for the next.
Yeah. Yeah. So like they bang. Riker slash Odan fixes the diplomatic situation at Planet MacGuffin, and then like, you know, it's like kind of just in time for the Trill host to be coming. Like they have to like beam the delegates off the ship and go warp 9 to meet the Trill ship en route. And Crusher takes the slug out of Riker, and they're waiting for the Trill to show up, and who should show up to be the next host but a lady.
And not an attractive lady, mind you.
This really put this episode in the early 90s.
Yeah, and I feel like they peanut butter over what could truly be the issue with a pretty flimsy issue. The new Odan, the female Odan, walks into Beverly's office after the operation and is like, "Hey, babe, hey," and Beverly is pretty cold to the idea. She's like, "Look, this has been a real roller coaster for me. I've seen you in 3 different bodies now in the last couple of days, and I've got like body whiplash. So I don't know if I can love you anymore based on what this is." And what it totally disregards the gender change, which I believe to be in this moment in time, like contemporary to when the show was made, the real issue.
Yeah. It's like, it's like something that is very retrograde to us sitting here in 2016, watching it, and probably seemed really radical at the time.
Yeah.
It's like Chasing Amy. If you watch that movie now, you're like, holy shit, like this is such a bad exploration of LGBT issues. But at the time it was like, wow, isn't it cool that we're going to an art house cinema and watching a movie that has like loving depictions of gay characters?
To be quite honest, most Kevin Smith films have not aged that well.
Well, neither has this episode, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that you're absolutely right. Like the real issue for the Doctor is that it's a girl, not a boy. And like all you need to know about that being the case is that she kind of like looks away when they tell her the new host is about to come in, and then she turns around like a kid about to open a Christmas present and is immediately crestfallen when it's an attractive blonde and not an attractive man.
That's the moment. That's the moment when you know the scene that follows is a lie.
Yeah.
Because she was excited at one time for the new man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of disappointing. You know, I feel like she needs to listen to Macklemore's seminal song "Same Love," and think about loving the person and not the gender, Adam.
Do you think once the world opens up to the idea of aliens, like after first contact, does the whole tension between genders fall away? Like, do you need proof of life on other planets to fully evaporate whatever that weird, like, gender block is with respect to romantic relationships?
I don't know.
Because to me, like, this sci-fi future feels post-gender to me in a lot of ways. And so it felt very weird to me that
suddenly
Beverly
that's
would
such
have
a big
this
issue.
Reaction.
Yeah. Well,
it felt
know.
Like a moment where the time that the show was made leaked into the time when the show is supposed to depict in a way that that they couldn't stop.
Right.
Or and, chose not to stop.
And I mean, like, they could have had the same outcome with Dr. Crusher saying something about, like, there are many people in my society that are very gender fluid, and mm-hmm. I wish I could get there, but I personally can't. Or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, there's lots of people that are bisexual, and, like, I think that it's not... I think research is starting to indicate that for women, it's, like, fairly common to be attracted to both genders, right?
Maybe Beverly's sexuality, like, is only specific to a hairstyle. Because Beverly really enjoys, like, some big, thick hair.
Yeah.
Jack Crusher had it. Yeah. O'Dan had it. Riker, on certain days, has it.
Sure. Yeah, she could get down with Riker.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like...
Maybe her interests are that granular.
I feel like I have butted up pretty hard against my fairly feeble understanding of human sexuality studies. at the end of this conversation.
If you have some letters, I would recommend sending them to Jesse Thorne.
But yeah, a little bit of a sad trombone ending to this story.
Yeah.
That I found a bit disappointing. But that is The Host.
Do you have a little blinking light on your keyboard right now, Ben?
I sure do, Adam. Let's see if we can bring ourselves to fuck this light.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secure channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first of two personal priority one messages comes from Susan. Insert nickname here, Ben. So I'm going to say... Susan Lobster Hands, and also Wilbur and Henry. And this message is for Andrew. And it goes like this. Merry Christmas from your wife and guinea pigs. Thanks for being a great guinea pig dad, putting up with my various drunk Shimodas, and for not giving up on the difficult levels in life. Here's to our continuing mission, together fueled by tea or Earl Grey Hot, cuddles with the pigs, and great podcasts like this one that we can enjoy together. I love you. Wow, Susan.
Oh, that was
real sweet.
Truly heartfelt.
It's got to be hard to take care of guinea pigs when you got those lobster hands, though.
About half of our listeners seem to listen not contemporaneous with the release of episodes, and so I feel like anybody that's going through here might not realize that, like, these are all going out right around the holidays.
Yeah.
but yeah, the holiday priority ones have gotten real, real touching, in my opinion.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? That's real nice.
Real sweet. Thanks, Susan.
I wish I had thought to get you a priority one message, Ben, but I didn't get you anything. I'm sorry.
You sent me a lovely card that made me and my wife laugh out loud, Adam.
Oh, good. I was wondering if you got that.
Yeah, it was great.
Nice. Our second priority one message is from Ross, Andrea, and Sally. and it is for Ryan. And the special request on this message is to please read it as Kevin Uxbridge. So here we go. Dear brother, I am a Daud, an immortal being who has never used his powers to help you up until now. As you have no reliable car, I give you Durgo's shuttle from the episode Final Mission. It is a sturdy craft with a sober pilot. Don't worry about the thrusters. They've been vetted by the galaxy's finest engineers. Don't say I never did nothing for you. Love, Kevin.
I'm just picturing, you know those Lexus commercials that they have around the holiday where they pull it into the driveway with the huge bow on it?
Oh, yeah.
Durgo's shuttle with a perfect red velvet bow on top.
Oh, man. You never see that bow in real life.
No, nobody ever does that. It sucks.
Wow, well, enjoy your brand new car, Ryan. Ross, Andrea, and Sally, and also Kevin, I guess.
Yeah, maybe take it into a mechanic and have him check the brakes.
Yeah, I mean, a pre-purchase inspection is probably a good idea, especially if Jordy's the guy poking around under the hood.
Yeah.
Safe travels, Ryan. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Those aren't grumble guts. Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did, but I kind of want to toss it to you this time.
Okay.
Who's your drunk Shimoda, Adam?
To me, it is about a thing that this show does to convey a sense of alien wisdom, and that is the pan flute music. The pan flute music is back in a big way every time Odan says anything. Anytime the trill is inside Riker and Riker talks, anytime discussion of the trill occurs, you get this Native American pan flute motif, and it's just really condescending, I think. So it's one of the unlikable Shimoda moments that we occasionally call attention to, and so my Shimoda goes to the pan flute.
Nice. Mine is I guess the doctor for that scene in the elevator at the beginning where she and Odan are kind of coming up with they're kind of riffing up a fictional reason why they can't get down to work with Data. Just for the unnecessariness of that. I just Data's stated purpose for being is that he wants to learn more about being human. And concealing aspects of your biological lifestyle from him is so unfriendly. You know?
How friendly do you want them to be? Do you want them to invite him over as a third?
Like that time that he stood in the corner watching somebody give birth?
Beverly and Odan are in the lifestyle.
No, but I just think that pussyfooting around it is he is never offended when somebody sends him out of the room.
Yeah.
So just give
just
it to him.
Just send him out of the room.
Just be like, hey, Data, I'd prefer if you didn't share this with anybody else. But we have some private mommy and daddy stuff to do right now. And we'll catch up with you later.
He has proven himself to be the best secret keeper on the ship.
Yeah.
You don't have any problem telling him that.
Yeah, I guess she doesn't know that, though, right? Because they had to wipe her memory of that. Only we know that.
It's a real Gordian knot of a issue right there. Real Geordian knot.
Whoa.
Oh, I should have saved that for a Geordi episode.
Let's do it. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people,
a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 4, episode 24, The Mind's Eye. Romulan forces kidnap Geordi and turn him into a killing machine. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Geordi looks like he could be a killing machine. With those guns?
Yeah.
They're just going to turn him loose. I'm excited.
Put some arm butter on that bad boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, me too. I remember this episode fondly.
So no vetoes.
Nope.
I mean, we don't even have them to use, so.
One thing we're especially fond of is the support our viewers grant our show by their regular contributions. They do that by going to MaximumFun.org/donate, where they're able to support the show in sort of a monthly subscription way. That is awesome. That is the best way to support the show. Other ways that support takes form is through the sale of merch. So we've got a couple t-shirts out there. We've got some glassware in the works. We've got more t-shirts coming. We love making these t-shirts. And if you have ideas for what those should look like, definitely send those in to drunkshimoda@gmail.com. That's also where we answer viewer mail and where people can give us their thoughts on the show. Other places people can do that is on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm over there as @CoverTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminAHR.
Yeah. I think you can still slip a entry into our contest under the door. Go to iTunes and leave us a nice review. Take a screenshot of that review once it's up in iTunes. Send it to drunkshimoda@gmail.com and you're entered to win a poster and t-shirt. You can even enter to win if your review is very old It's just about getting to 1,000. That's when the T-shirt and poster prize are activated. So we want to get to 1,000 reviews by the end of the year.
I think we can do it. This episode will be coming out on, I believe, Monday, December 26th. So about 5 more days left.
Yeah. Get it in. All right. That's just about it. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for all of the other music you hear on the show. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a arm-buttered-up episode of The Greatest Generation.